OT After Dark is a podcast run by two occupational therapists and is for adults only. We believe that sex and sexual pleasure are a human right for consenting adults, regardless of ability, age, gender, or sexual orientation. We discuss topics that cover a wide variety of intimacy and sexual practices. To be true to our strong views regarding inclusivity, we use common and slang terms regarding sexual topics, which may be considered explicit. Listener discretion is advised.
We have exciting news to share. We recently partnered with DirectRec, a free app for OT practitioners, PT practitioners, and speech-language pathologists.
DirectRec helps clinicians to find peer-vetted products, and we recently have added our own recommendations of products on DirectRec for sexual health and wellness.
We helped DirectRec get a little extra sexy. DirectRec helps clinicians share products and other digital info, like YouTube videos and Google Docs, with their clients.
DirectRec helps you to track clients' follow-through on your product recommendations. So to start using DirectRec, click on the link on our website at otafterdark.com or in our social media bios.
Hello, welcome to OT After Dark. I'm Kay.
And I'm JJ.
And we're both occupational therapists.
And we're here talking to you about sex. And in this episode, we have the pleasure of speaking with Rebecca. So welcome, Rebecca, to OT After Dark.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, why we brought you here.
Well, I am here as a parent to a child with autism. My son, I'm going to call him Bean, is 14 years old. He has low-functioning autism. He is nonverbal, and he is all about the sex right now. I am open about it, even though I can be uncomfortable about it. But I thought it was important to come and share what it's like to be a parent to somebody who is learning how to express their sexuality.
Yeah.
Yes, and we are so appreciative that you are on here talking to us about the reality of what it's like raising a child who is a teenager with special needs and
special hormones
and
special
sexual hormones. Desires.
So
yes.
So 14 now.
When
did it start? Like the actual physical noticing.
You know, I want to say boys kind of notice early on, as soon as they can, they do. But really, like around age 9 is when I remember for the first time, I'm like, oh, we can't rub ourselves on the grocery cart at Giant Eagle. And oh, we're out for a walk in the wagon and we can't just pull it out. And so that's about when I realized, wow, we really now have to get a hold on this, because if I wait and I let this go until we are a teenager, I've already gone too far. Like I've let him go too far with the behaviors.
So at that point, what steps did you take?
Well, first, after I got over the mortification of it, I actually reached out to his education team, for help, because I didn't know where to go and what to do. I am lucky that my son has a very good education team. He is in an all autism-based school, and he had been there since he started preschool, so he had already been there for about 6 years at the time. So I felt like I could reach out to somebody and say, I don't know what to do. My son is touching himself in public. He is trying to rub himself on me, on the grocery cart, on other objects, and this is not okay with me. And so what can we do to help, so he knows that these behaviors, while they are okay, there's a time and there's a place.
And who's on that education team? Just so we know what disciplines we're talking here.
At his school, it is an intervention specialist, an occupational therapist, a speech therapist, and then he also has what's called a parent educator, and that person acts as the go-between, the parent and the educational team.
Okay.
Now, I think it was also interesting that you said, well, I'm okay with it. And I feel like a lot of times, you know, we won't really get that reaction from parents. So kind of, I guess, if you can speak to a little bit more about that
Okay, well, spoiler alert, I am also now an occupational therapist.
Spoiler. May have a little bit of a biased opinion.
But no, but sexuality is a normal part of our lives. We are all human beings. We all have hormones. We all have urges. It is biology after all, but it's almost a taboo topic with people in general where we're uncomfortable talking about it, or we think we have to play it up too much. And I think we just in general need to recognize that it is a basic thing of human life. Mm-hmm. Everybody does it. Everybody likes
some
it.
Some people would like to say that not everybody does unfortunately.
That is true, I should say. But it is a normal part of life. And
this is true.
There's nothing to be ashamed of for finding pleasure, you know, in touching yourself or, you know, expressing that.
Preach it, girl.
But it's uncomfortable to talk about, you know. And
especially when it's your son.
Especially when it's your son. It's uncomfortable to talk about. But being an occupational therapist, it's an ADL. You know, it's something that we need to be okay with helping people with. And I felt an obligation to my son to let him know this is okay. This is not something disgusting. This is not something shameful. But there is a time and there is a place.
Mm-hmm. So how did the education team respond? What was there?
we did a social story.
Excellent.
So believe it or not, there is software out there that has pictures with the icons that he's able to understand. So we created a story called Private Things in Private Places.
I love that.
I love the title.
Yes, so our story...
If there's any publishers out there listening, you might want to chat with Rebecca here.
So his story is called Private Things in Private Places. And in the story, we talk about what private places are. And we decided that private places are defined as his bedroom and his bathroom at his house. Because public bathrooms, while they are private places, are not his private place. And so we thought it was very important to be very specific about the places that we would allow him to have this behavior and this exploration. And that our private things are, I am allowed to take my clothes off and I am allowed to touch myself, you know, on my privates. And we just decided to be very open and frank, and we call it a penis.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
So we're teaching the terminology. It is a penis.
It is in fact a penis.
Medical books would agree. It is a penis. It's not a winky. It's not like a thingamajig. It's a penis. So we are direct. It is a penis. And he is allowed to do whatever he wants to with his own penis in his bedroom and in the bathroom.
So did he respond quickly to the social story? Like, are we still working on following the private... How's it going?
We don't even need the book anymore. Oh, okay. No, we at first, like, I read it with him, and he would flip through the pages and kind of look at it. But what was so important was that everyone in our family and everyone on his education team used the same language of private things in private places. And if we were at home, we would redirect him to one of his private places. So at first, we would walk him up to his room or the bathroom, and he could decide where he wanted to go. But the school team would say, oh, Casey, that's a private thing for a private place. School is not a private place. And he accepted it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So we just use very concrete but yet very simple terminology. And everyone was unified on how we would redirect to let him know, not a private place, or, yeah, you're at home, but the living room is not a private place.
Right.
And so now it's actually kind of, I say funny, but you, to be an autism mom, you've got to have some humor with it. It's the only way I stay sane. So if he's in the living room and I see the hand going in the pants, I go, oh, private things in private places. He will roll his eyes at me, walk upstairs, and throws a shirt over the railing to let me know, okay, I'm taking my clothes off, but I'm going to my room, and I hear the door close.
That's very 14-year-old,
right?
It's very 14-year-old, but I how wonderful that he knows the rules, he follows them, and secretly I love the fact that he gets upset with me and rolls his eyes at me.
Very 14-year-old.
It's very 14-year-old, and as an autism mom, you don't think you're ever going to have typical experiences.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I was, a couple weeks ago, I was at a workshop on addressing sexuality with people with developmental disabilities, and one of the things that the woman brought up who was running it was the one thing in developmental disabilities that is not delayed is sexuality.
Nope. Hormones come on their own set, very, very predictable schedule.
Yeah.
In the tween years.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you can't stop biology.
No. So it's still, we can't run from it. We can't pretend that somebody's not going to masturbate. And
we shouldn't.
Be interested.
And we shouldn't.
No.
Right. Exactly.
Half hand, we'll find, we'll explore, we'll touch.
Half hand, half penis.
Half hand, half vagina. You're all going to touch.
Yep.
But what's actually really nice is now that he's older, we expanded on his story to include, because again, when a child's nine, they're generally not going to ejaculate after they come to orgasm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Generally doesn't happen. We're at the age starting to happen. And I want him to know sometimes when I get very excited, fluid will come out of my penis that is white. It is okay. It is called semen.
And then is there a cleanup as part of that education?
He knows.
What to do with the semen?
He knows he needs to get a towel or a tissue, and he wipes, he throws it away, and washes his hands.
So now you're teaching hygiene. it's fantastic.
But again, there's no shame around it.
We are
matter of fact. We are concrete. We are explaining what happens because I don't want him to be afraid. I don't want him to be scared. And I don't want to clean up a mess all the time. I mean, if we're being real about this.
Right.
I don't want to clean up a mess every single day. So why not make him accountable for the simple basics? Hey, this happens. Clean it up. Wash your hands. Throw the tissue away. Like, put the towel down the laundry chute. I'd rather do the laundry than to find a surprise.
You know, we talk about sex.
Scraping it off the wall. Like,
I haven't had to do that yet. Please don't go there.
Knock on wood.
But we talk about sex as an ADL, but bathing and hygiene is too. And so, mm-hmm. I mean, as occupational therapy practitioners, we really should be addressing the cleanup part.
Yeah.
And the hygiene part.
And I am fortunate in that. He has always loved to take showers and wash his hands.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm very fortunate in that he loves showers. Sometimes he'll come to me with the shampoo. So I'm fortunate in that aspect that he's okay with having to clean up.
He likes being clean.
He likes to be clean.
So now we've talked about private things in private places. What happens when it's not so private? I'm going to guess that we're not private all the time.
We are not private all the time. Well, sometimes the solo play is satisfying enough for him. He still does try to explore, what is it like if I rub myself on somebody else? And I am usually that lucky individual. And let me tell you, I never thought that my 14-year-old son would try to hump me.
I think most mothers don't think that.
No. So I'm doing dishes and all of a sudden I hear a weird giggle behind me and all of a sudden there's someone going on my leg. And I'm like, beans, the rules are you cannot rub your penis on mommy. Private things in private places. Mommy is not a private thing, and mommy is not a private place.
So do you have advice, and you have the advantage because you're also an OT, do you have advice for occupational therapy practitioners who have a parent coming to them and saying, my child is doing this? Like, how would you want a professional to respond to a behavior like that, in that initial response?
I would say first you need to know what the family's values are and you need to know what the family is okay with and what they're not okay with. Because not only are we providing our services to the individual client, but we are supporting the family. And it's my values and my beliefs may not be the same as another family. And so I would say first and foremost, I don't want to impose my values on someone else that way. So you need to know what the family is okay with. But then after that, I think, honestly, you just need to encourage them to find the language that's comfortable for them, find the terminology that they're okay with using, but you need to be open and you need to be honest, and there needs to be enough level of trust and respect where you can have that conversation. I would think of a parent's coming to you saying, hey, like, you know, my child is masturbating in the living room, or my child found content online and they really seem to like it. Or, you know, my child, you know, has, you know, a girl or a boy at school they're interested in, and, you know, I'm concerned about this. I would think that that level of trust and respect is already there, but openness and directness, I think, is the way to go.
Yeah. So another question, kind of follow up to this, because we had put out a poll on Twitter regarding, you know, at what point, you know, how many practitioners are really addressing sexuality during the initial evaluation. And kind of one of the comments that kind of came up over and over again.
Not in peds.
Not in peds, but like clearly we're discussing this in a pediatric population. So I guess from that parent perspective, at what point do you feel that it would be appropriate to bring up this idea of sex and sexuality?
And that's a really good question. And I think that if I were raising, like, you know, what I would call a typically developing child, so a child who does not have a disability, I would honestly say, oh, not until the tween years, not until puberty. Like, I don't need to worry about that until it happens, because there's no need. But honestly, I think we're doing a disservice to children in general when we don't talk about our body and respect for our bodies and appropriate types of touch and who is allowed to touch your body, who is not allowed to touch your body, where are they allowed to touch their body, where can they not touch your body. Even though I'm my son's mom, I would never touch him in his genitals for sexual arousal, sexual pleasure. He has pleasured himself so much that he's actually gotten abrasions on it. And he's cut himself. Hey, he didn't complain. He was having fun. But we have to put ointment on it. Like, again, another thing I never thought I'd be doing for my 14-year-old son, putting ointment on a self-injury on my junk. But, you know, I had to do it. But again, I'm mom, but I put the ointment on, I was done, we didn't make it a thing, we didn't have any inappropriate talk about it. I said, oh, mommy has to put this on because you have a cut on your penis, mommy's putting this on. But a doctor shouldn't, a doctor's going to check your privates, he's going to look at your penis, but he's not going to touch it and manipulate it in a way that you start to feel happy and that you want him to touch you more. And I think we need to talk to children about that early on. I don't think there's anything wrong about that.
And who, because there's a huge thing in, there's something, it's called altered scripts, how people with intellectual disabilities, children born with disabilities in general, have these altered scripts. Whereas if we talk about the 0-3 to population, which a lot of people are like, well, why would we address sexuality in 0-3? Mm-hmm. But 0-3 and typically developing children are getting the idea of privacy. Mm-hmm. They're getting an idea of who can and can't touch you. They're starting to get independent and taking care of themselves during like potty training and all that. But suddenly with children with delays, it's, well, everybody can see you naked.
And there is no privacy.
Everybody
at that point.
Everybody's in the bathroom helping you wipe, and
it's not even at home. It's at school.
Yeah.
It's at school that my teachers may be changing me because I'm not toilet trained and I'm 7. Or it may be, oh, the aide is helping me because I had an accident and now they're seeing me without my underpants on because they're changing me. I could be a teenager and I could have multiple people at, you know, depending on my situation that may assist me in the bathroom.
And if we're not thinking about establishing what the boundaries are, where privacy needs to be at the young age, then at 14, 15, 16, we can't be that surprised that people don't understand that you can't whip your penis out.
Right. At the grocery, because you see Captain Crunch.
Because that's been completely normalized.
Captain Crunch. It happened. He was so excited for the Captain Crunch. All of a sudden, the hands went in the pants, the hands pulled out our friend, and the hands were having a lot of fun.
I'm going to have to take a closer look at the Captain Crunch box.
He doesn't do it for me. I think it was the cereal and not necessarily the Captain.
But that's the thing. If we can't suddenly expect teenager to understand your penis doesn't come out here is your whole
life. That's what's been happening. Everybody sees it becomes an elbow at that point. It's like, okay, this is
like,
just
what's the difference.
Well, and I remember my brother, when he was a little boy, was fascinated with his penis. He named it. He thought it was the best thing ever, and he wanted to show everybody. And my brother did not have a disability. And I remember he introduced himself to one of my friends, and he goes, "Hi, my name is Nikki. I have a dicky. Do you want to see it?" And we were at the grocery store one day, and we were going down the frozen food section, and, you know, he goes, "Mommy, Mommy, my penis is growing." So, like, it's natural.
It's
like,
natural.
It's natural.
It's part of typical development, and we can't pretend that because somebody has a disability that somehow that development isn't there and we're going to ignore it.
And my brother was 5 at that time. So why aren't we having a conversation about it? I think it's because it's uncomfortable for us.
It's uncomfortable.
Right.
And it's uncomfortable for a healthcare practitioner, any discipline, to have to talk to a parent in a 0-3 population about long-term what it means, why we have to establish boundaries now, establish privacy, and what privacy is now. It is uncomfortable. That's why we're hoping to
kind of break some of that stigma. You know, and I think when we've said this, I think pretty much in every episode that we've had so far, that, you know, there's this stigma around individuals with disabilities that they are asexual. And clearly that is not the case.
Asexual, can't give consent, would never want to explore that. No one would ever want to have sex with them. Mm-hmm. And that's not true.
Right, right.
So any signs that he's interested in relationships?
You know, he is one of, I think, 6 boys in his class, and there is 1 girl in his class, but he's not so much a fan of her. But it's not because I don't think he has a preference one way or another. It's just because she tends to be a little bit loud, and he doesn't like noise. So I think it's more that. However, the fact that I'm the only one he wants to rub himself on, I think that, you know, if we, you know, had to define his sexuality, I think he would say, I am a heterosexual, mm-hmm. but I don't know. And honestly, it's irrelevant to me. It doesn't matter to me mm-hmm. because he's my son. I love him for who he is, not who he wants to love, mm-hmm. not what gets him aroused.
Rub his penis
on him. No, I wish it wouldn't always be me. And I don't, for the record, I don't let him do this because it is not okay. We stop the behavior. But no, I mean, he is who he is, and mm-hmm. he'll come into that knowledge in his own time. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about whose responsibility is it to bring this up. Do you feel it's the parents' responsibility to bring up the idea of sex and sexuality with their child? Or is it the professional and the OT's responsibility to bring this up to the family?
I really think it's a shared responsibility. I don't feel that it's fair to put 100% of that on the occupational therapist, and I don't think it's fair to put 100% of that on the parent. Mm-hmm. I feel that the parents, especially with a 0-3 population, or even like, you know, the toddler years or like the early elementary years, that I don't think a parent is in that mindset to actually think about that. It's not on their radar. And I honestly think a lot of occupational therapists, especially those who work in peds with a younger population, I don't think they're comfortable talking about it.
No, definitely not.
I with my son, his behavior specialist sent me a wonderful resource from Vanderbilt, which talks about, you know, our changing bodies. And, you know, puberty is a time when my body is changing from a boy to a man or from a girl to a woman. And it explains the changes that happen not only in our primary sexual characteristics, but our secondary ones. It talks about my scrotum is going to get larger. My penis is going to get bigger. I am going to get pubic hair. I am going to get hair in my armpits. My body is going to start to smell and I will need to wear deodorant. And it's got wonderful visuals. So I sent this information out to the team that I work with. Of about 18 occupational therapists. All but 2 said basically either had no response or I'm not really going to use this.
So why do you think it is? Do you think it's discomfort or do you think it's they legitimately don't think it's our place?
I don't know if it's not our place. I think discomfort is a big thing, number one. Mm-hmm. And I think that we as individuals have our own set of morals, our own set of beliefs, our own set of what we're comfortable talking about, our own culture, talking, you know, about things in general. And sexuality is a touchy topic. You may sit around with your girlfriends mm-hmm. or, you know, people you're close to and you may talk about it, but how in depth do you really talk about it? You don't. That's, and now we're having to talk about one of the most intimate mm-hmm. things that we do with somebody that you never thought you'd be having this conversation with. And it is uncomfortable. And so I think as people, it's hard to talk about such an intimate subject. However, as an occupational therapist, I put my personal beliefs aside. I've read OTPF3. The framework says that sexuality is an activity of daily mm-hmm. living. Mm-hmm. So as a woman, as a person, as me, Rebecca, I may be uncomfortable talking about my sexuality, my sex life, you know, and all of my viewpoints on it. But as an occupational therapist, I have an obligation to be able to talk to this with my clients and their families. And it's actually helped me to be more comfortable with it in my own personal life.
Isn't it interesting that that's the thing we're uncomfortable of? We talk to clients from all the way up across lifespan about such personal things. We talk about their mental health issues. We talk about toileting. I ask, can you wipe your own butt? Or can you reach back there? All these incredibly embarrassing personal things. Yet somehow, when it comes to sex, we're like, nope, not going to say it.
Yeah. And right? Talking about, right? I'm not there when you're having sex. I'm not there when you're masturbating, but yet I'll help you take a shower.
I know.
I'll help you wipe yourself after a bowel movement.
Right.
And I may help you put a tampon in, but right. I'm not going to talk to you about sex. Especially if, like, I've known you've done it before. like, you're a parent, you're a grandparent, and it's a part of your life that you still enjoy and you still want to have.
And suddenly it's the one personal question that people are nervous about.
It's almost like it's the number one topic that no one's allowed to talk about. And I remember when I was on my rotation for field work, I was in an acute care setting in a hospital, and we had a patient who had had hip replacement surgery. And she asked the physical therapist, who was a male, to leave the room when we were doing the evaluation. And she said the number one question she had was, how can I still have sex with my husband while I'm recovering? Because this is very important to me in our relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember my clinical supervisor almost taken aback of, ooh.
Like, what do you mean you have sex?
Oh, my goodness. And the response was, we have handouts for that.
Oh, no.
And
we can't talk about it. We can't talk about it.
But we have to be able to talk about it.
Oh, my goodness.
It's important to people.
It is important to people.
We've talked about this, why we think a podcast is a good approach, because all the OT practitioners and whoever else, because I have discovered that it's not just OT practitioners listening to this, can listen to it in the privacy of wherever, in their car, and at least start to think about it. And you don't have to, like, talk amongst your peers. Mm-hmm. And you realize that there's at least three OTs right here that are like, it's okay.
Absolutely. And, you know, I kind of think about it as you're talking about this, and you have that unique perspective that you are an OT, but how isolating can it be for a family that doesn't have the skill set that you do on how to address this, and knowing that this is an issue for their child, that maybe they are whipping their penis out in the middle of the grocery
and not
store.
Not knowing who to talk to about it.
And exactly. Right. And then, you know, What does that do for that family dynamic?
Well, and shame and stigma. Am I the only one? A lot of times as a parent to a child with a disability, you feel like I'm the only one going through this. Because you look around and no one else's kid at the grocery store is rubbing up and down on the grocery cart or lying on the floor and putting their hands in their pants. I'm the only one here right now going through that. So you do feel very alone and isolated at times. And again, it goes back to that trust, you know, and having that mutual respect and having a relationship with the people that are helping your child and helping you as a family to get through it. To any parents out there listening to this, you are not the only one going through this. I guarantee you, most of us, especially in the teenage years, we're going through it, but we all may not want to admit it out loud, especially on a podcast. But we're all going through it. It's a normal part of life.
I should say, we've been talking about your son. I feel like we should clarify, boys and girls masturbate.
Boys and girls masturbate. Yes, they do.
We did talk about that in our last episode, but we were talking about really older. But sorry for anyone out there who thinks
I just only have boys.
Don't masturbate.
I just only have boys. I can only speak to my experience.
But I think that came up a couple weeks ago at that workshop I was at, where a lot of parents they expect it from the boy, but the ones who have daughters are like, wait, what?
Mm-hmm. No, equal opportunity.
Yeah, equal opportunity. Penises and vaginas.
And I think, again, just sitting here, you know, as, you know, a parent, as a woman, we have to be comfortable admitting.
Be comfortable.
Yeah, and there's no stigma. There shouldn't be a negative stigma attached to a woman wanting to explore that aspect of her sexuality and her body.
Not at all.
Absolutely.
Any final thoughts you want to share?
No, just that this is wonderful. Thank you so much for inviting me tonight. This was wonderful. Initially, I'm like, I don't know. And will my husband be okay with this? But when I told him, he's like, yeah, go out there and do that. Just thank you very much. And I hope that, you know, our discussion tonight maybe helped a few parents to get over maybe any, stigma that they had, or just realize that there's people out there that I can talk to about this. There's people I can go to, and I'm not alone in any of this.
Yeah, great. And thank you so much for sharing your perspective. I mean, it's such a value to us to, you know, have you share this part of your life with this community here. And I hope this, you know, helps other practitioners realize that this is an important aspect for families and people of all ages. You know, we're not just talking about this once you turn 18 and you're an adult. No, starts way earlier than that, guys.
And if you wait till then, you've waited too long.
Yep, exactly.
So on that note, I want to say cheers to destigmatizing masturbation.
Cheers to destigmatizing masturbation. Cheers.
Hey, listeners, we have a favor to ask. Obviously, we just heard some great stories from a parent and practitioner about addressing sex and intimacy with autism.
And we know that there are many of you out there that have wonderful stories about how you're addressing sex and sexuality in your own practice.
And we want you to share those stories. So we have a couple options for you. If you go directly to the anchor.fm app, there is a place where you can leave a voice message. You can just record your story about how you're addressing sex and intimacy. We can add that right to the podcast. So make sure you don't include any personal details that you don't want in a podcast.
You can also message us on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. We are at OT After Dark. You can also send us a message or an email via our website, otafterdark.com.
And don't forget, sex is an ADL.